Hey Alice, how's it going? Where are you these days? I was just checking in and I wanted to let you know that we're going to air your episode this Saturday. And how are you feeling about it?
Hi, Fariba. I am back in Arkansas. In fact, this morning I woke up to the sound of gunshots from Senator Bob Ballinger and his family. I just got back from working with UNICEF on the Mexico-Guatemala border, but I'm excited to hear this episode that I worked on in Arkansas, which is my home state, and a pretty strange place, even for me.
Welcome to On Spec, where you can hear stories that bring you closer to the globe. I'm your host, Fariba Nawa. We're continuing our series on fake news and how everyday people are impacted by it, bringing people with opposing views face to face to find common ground. The US is among the countries with the highest percentage of climate change skeptics, despite climate change being a scientific fact. More than half of the country thinks climate change isn't real or man-made. Many of them voted for Donald Trump for president in 2016. In the 4 years Trump was in power, green policies that helped the environment were scrapped. The US is also one of the countries that emits the most gases, accelerating global warming. Now US President Joe Biden is supporting green policies, but much damage has been done. And one of the states suffering from climate change is Arkansas. Yet many of the politicians and people there deny that it is man-made. Arkansas native and journalist Alice Driver introduces her neighbor, a state senator and climate skeptic, to an organic farmer and climate activist.
I'm sitting on an old porch swing in Oak, Arkansas. It's late, nearing midnight, and the stars are bright enough to light up an old barn nearby. This is where I was born, and you're hearing the last of the fall cicadas. My parents were a part of the Back to the Land movement in the 1970s. Back then, a million Americans uprooted themselves from cities and moved to rural America. They wanted to grow their own food, build their own houses, and live in ways that respected and protected the environment. They were mostly young, white, and educated. I'm a child of that movement. When I was little, my parents had an outhouse, and it was a two-seater. So that means that two people could go to the bathroom at once, which probably seems unimaginable today. And then after the outhouse, they bought a composting toilet, and they had a garden and grew most of their food. And so I grew up in a household where thinking about the land and our connection to nature was very much a part of my childhood. In the 45 years my parents have lived in Arkansas, they've witnessed temperatures increase, changes in the growing season for the vegetables they plant in their garden, and massive floods. I remember the floods as a kid. My Aunt Karen was driving me to school with her son Brom, and we ended up in a flash flood, and the water rose quickly, submerging our car up to the windows. We had to escape and swim out. Arkansas is in the South, in America's Bible Belt. The world might know Arkansas because of former President Bill Clinton, a Democrat. He was the governor here decades ago. But it's a red Republican state. 3 million people live in this state of rolling hills, plateaus, and limestone caves, and many work in agriculture. Climate change is causing more frequent floods and snowstorms and hotter summers, putting livelihoods at risk.
Last night, parts of Texas got to temperatures that we see in Alaska. In fact, they were the same as they were in Alaska. So global warming is no longer a pressing concern in Houston. We've solved that problem. The bad news is they don't have electricity. The windmills froze, so the power grid failed. Millions of Texans woke up to boil their water.
There's a lot of fake news convincing people here that climate change isn't real. The question is, how does fake news shape our views? And what does it take to convince someone that climate change exists? To meet a climate denier, I didn't have to go far. I'm standing outside of my parents' house. I just had coffee and I'm about to walk over to the neighbor's house, Bob Ballinger. He is a state senator in Arkansas, and he just moved, the last few months he moved out here with his wife and his 7 kids, and they're my parents' closest neighbor, pretty much. Close out here, you know, is relative. It's probably like a 10-minute walk down the dirt road, maybe less. And then farther down is the creek I grew up swimming in. It's the Little Mulberry. I think Bob cut down some trees, so now you can see the creek from the house up here. A lot of memories for me because I used to swim across this part of the creek when it was flooded when I was little.
You scared me so bad whenever I went around that turn.
Did I scare you?
Yeah.
Are you think your parents are home? Yeah, I think I'm here.
It's not a video.
Good morning. Hey, Bob, how's it going?
Doing good. You want a coffee or anything?
Oh, yeah, I'd love one, okay. Bob has a boyish face, bright blue eyes, and he often wears overalls. He's 47 and grew up in Oklahoma. Then he went to school, and he and his wife Jessica settled down in Arkansas. Bob chose politics because his friends encouraged him to help their community.
You want to go to the creek?
Yeah, okay. I walked to the creek. Nice to meet you.
See you later.
Like many conservatives, Bob believes in limited government and defines personal freedoms in terms of buying a gun or not wearing a mask during the pandemic. In 2020, he was one of several senators to sue the Arkansas Health Department for requiring face masks in public spaces.
The question is, you know, how much of the change that we may be going through now is associated to man-made climate change? And then the next question is, you know, if man-made climate change, you know, if we really are having a large impact on it, then what is the policy to try to change that? So what do we do to fix that? And that's where really the rubber meets the road. I mean, I'd be willing to say that, you know, our contribution of carbon in the atmosphere could very well have an impact on the climate. I mean, how much that is and whether it's de minimis or extensive, I don't know. But then the question is, how many people are we willing to kill in order to gain the small changes in climate? So that's really
Bob isn't fond of the environmental movement. Climate activists recommend eating less meat and adopting clean energy like solar. But Bob argues that if individuals or lawmakers require these changes, food and energy will become so expensive that people will starve or die. It's a point that might sound too extreme to be true, but it's common among rural conservatives.
You know, I'm not a scientist, but I could really have a hard time seeing how the eating of red meat is really contributing that much to climate change, enough that what we need to do is reduce a protein from society in order to make it where we can have what impact on climate. And until you can answer and tell me, you know, that this is the solution, getting rid of red meat, we'll make it where we have a more stable climate and we don't go into a warming period that we can't recover from. Unless you can show me that science, then I wouldn't want to clamp down on that and make it where some people go hungry.
The science is there. United Nations data shows that meat and dairy account for almost 15% of the world's greenhouse gas emissions. Less meat production also means less pollution from industrial farming. But in Arkansas, the question about the future of meat isn't really about science, it's about money. Tyson, the world's second largest meat and poultry producer, is headquartered here. And lots of Arkansans are in the poultry business, and state leaders are in its pockets. Tyson has spent well over $1 million lobbying the federal government each year since 2016. I'm not here to argue with Bob, but I want to know, where do his beliefs come from? Do you watch TV news at all?
Not at all.
No. Ah, okay.
No, we're pretty crazy. We don't have a TV connected up to anything. We have a TV that has a Roku device, and that's down in my parents' area, and they watch reruns of game shows and, you know, Andy Griffith, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. And what, in terms of news site, like on the internet, or I don't know if you get paper magazines still, do you keep up with certain...
No, I'll tell you that my wife, we have a satellite radio in the car, and so we'll listen to Fox News on satellite radio occasionally. Most time we're in the car, we're talking, so we're not, but we'll have that on occasionally, so we'll get sort of the daily updates. In fact, Fox News has a, you know, daily update to the podcast, and I'll listen to that occasionally. But, as far as actually going to websites, about the only websites I go to now are driven from social media of some sorts.
Bob gets his news from social media, but what most people don't realize is that rural America is sort of a news desert. There's only one internet provider in a lot of towns, and cell service is spotty or non-existent, like in OARC. A lot of people end up listening to AM radio because it's free and available everywhere, and that's where many conservative news shows live. So what are they saying about climate change?
I mean, of course climate change is real. Climate changes. They say man-made climate change is real. And we don't know how much man did, but they just say it.
Conservative channels like Fox say essentially that it's not man-made, but instead is part of a natural cycle, like the Ice Age. So we shouldn't worry about it or change our behavior.
I'm Ben Shapiro. This is The Ben Shapiro Show.
Podcast hosts like Ben Shapiro, who Bob listens to, say that scientists and journalists like myself lie about climate change because we get paid to do it. Those ideas play into popular conspiracy theories, and it doesn't help that senators like Bob are backing them. Still, Bob admits that people are responsible for how they treat the Earth.
So, I love it out here, right? And why is it that I love it out here? I love the rocks, I love the trees, I love the creeks, why aren't I living in Tulsa or in the middle of Fayetteville, right? Well, my kids wouldn't swim in the water in Tulsa. And because of runoff, because of man-made pollutants, frankly.
Bob's talking about cities nearby. Tulsa's in Oklahoma and Fayetteville in Arkansas. And the runoff he mentions is caused by big farming. Basically, it's animal waste that's been collected into storage pools that overflow during floods, polluting rivers. That doesn't happen in OARC because we are part of the Ozark National Forest. It's protected by the federal government, and most of the land is not for sale or agricultural use. We have the cleanest water in the state. Bob's kids can swim here safely because of the environmental protection laws in place. They're the same ones he's fighting against.
We need to be good stewards of what we have, of the time that we have now, and try to make sure that for future generations, we leave these wonderful things for them. The question then is what do we do, right? I think your parents putting up solar panels, I think that's smart anyway. It makes them less reliant on a grid system that is imperfect and who knows how long it'll last.
My parents installed solar panels because they wanted to have a lower carbon footprint. Large carbon footprints increase greenhouse gases, which contribute to climate change. Bob praises my parents here, but later he says solar panels are too expensive.
The question is, do you want to force that on other people? And that's really the difference between me and, you know, Green New Deal, right? Is I don't want to force society to do that. I don't want to force, especially when there isn't a cost associated with it. And it would hurt my constituents. It would hurt my people, friends, people who I love who can't afford to to pay more in energy.
The Green New Deal is a proposed package of U.S. legislation to promote the use of 100% renewable energy within 10 years. This includes the adoption of electric cars and high-speed rail systems. It's true that energy prices may go up a bit, but not in the drastic way Bob's talking about. At this point, I'm feeling frustrated.
Like I said, I'm a skeptic, right? I'm a skeptic of motivations of scientists. I'm a skeptic of motivations of media. I'm a skeptic of motivations of politicians.
Bob is far from being the only one with these ideas. On a recent trip to Little Rock, some of the only stations I could get were religious and talk shows on AM radio. I heard religious leaders call journalists the devil, and mainstream talk radio hosts refer to us as enemies who are paid to create fake news.
Okay, well, I think it's interesting because I grew up out here in Elk. My brother grew up out here. My brother went to MIT. He's a scientist. I'm a journalist. And obviously, especially right now with what's happening in politics and with the level of kind of feelings that people have, I get a lot of criticism about my motivations, and it's really interesting for me because I grew up out here in Oak in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
I work for everyone, you know, anyone. I am interested in knowledge and information and research, like my brother. So
yeah.
I think when you actually get to know people and talk to people about what they're doing, it's harder to feel like it's a conspiracy, especially climate change.
And I think that's one thing that, scientists are just a bunch of human beings who are working really hard at trying to come to the right understanding of the way things work, right? But at the same time, sometimes it's more convenient, more money, more likes, more friends, more chairs if they go this direction, rather than if they go this direction. And so, I'm not saying that's why everyone does it. I'm not saying there's a great conspiracy. I'm just saying that that happens.
Bob and I head back to his house. I find out that his wife, Jessica, has been diagnosed with cancer, and I tell Bob I feel bad for asking for his time. But Bob says he wants to continue our discussion because he feels it is his job as a senator to talk to his constituents.
A lot of work. There's always a lot of work out here. Thank you for taking the time to talk to me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. I give you a ride on the mule, but I know you like to walk. But literally, if you want to ride back, then I'm happy to give you a ride back.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
After talking to Bob, I feel that it is more important than ever for Americans to have face-to-face conversations with people they disagree with, because it's harder to defend extreme views, attack people, and hate in person like people do online. You see people's humanity when you meet with them. I saw Bob's. Still, voices like Bob's are what Arkansas is known for. Senator Tom Cotton has said that climate change is, quote, probably real. But those are not the only voices in Arkansas.
Hi, Larry. I did.
Larry is 71 and retired, and he is energetic and constantly in movement, milking cows, chopping wood, curing bacon, planting his garden for the spring. He was nervous about our conversation and admitted that he had talked to a climate change scientist. When I drove up, he handed me his notes from that conversation.
Well, my name is Larry Kerrigan-Winter, and I'm in Madison County, Arkansas. I'm from Illinois, but I have been here for 42 years. I've been on this farm for 38 years. I had a career in recycling and solid waste for my county for 25 years, and created a model facility for small rural counties in a rural small rural communities in the United States, and got to learn, you know, quite a bit about solid waste across the nation. And then in retirement, I'd always milked, always had cattle, just a small herd, and we'd always put up a lot of food, big garden, had our three kids at home.
Larry works to keep a low carbon footprint. He and his wife Marty have three grown daughters and three grandchildren.
When we retired, we're just expanding our food production and the different kinds of foods that we enjoy. And so that's what we do. And we're in the middle of 90 acres with 9 springs. It's just gorgeous.
Larry runs an organic farm. He produces as much of his own food as possible. I wondered if we all lived like him, maybe we could save our planet.
We do have solar panels now, and if the grid is down, we can flip a switch, and we can, when the sun is shining, we got electricity to sustain our freezers, 2 freezers and 2 refrigerators, and that's about all we need.
Larry witnesses the impact of climate change firsthand.
You know, when we first moved here, we took up with some old-timers that were butchering hogs, and they did it the old way. They cured and smoked on their farm, and I learned how to do that. And the meat, pork has to take salt for 2 weeks below 50 degrees.
50 Fahrenheit is 12 Celsius, and anything above that can spoil meat.
Anymore, we don't get 2 weeks when it's below 50 degrees in the wintertime. And so there was a tradition that went back for generations here in Arkansas where the farmers bought their hogs the third week in June. They butchered the first week in December. They cured the meat for 2 weeks. They smoked it for 2 days, and then it hung, and they had fresh ham for Christmas. It was just a long-held tradition. Now you can't do that.
Larry knows from experience how climate change is transforming the environment around him.
You know, we don't get 2 weeks where it's below 50 degrees. Last year, it was worse. Unheard of. We had 4 or 5 days when it was in the 70s, the week of Christmas. We had ticks. There were 2 members of my family that got ticks in the middle of winter. That's just unheard of.
Climate change is often called a slow-moving disaster, and therefore harder to quantify. But Larry's been documenting its impact for years.
We've seen extreme heat and drought that went on for months, where everybody here sold their cattle, including Texas, Oklahoma, Missouri. We just sold our herds and we had to start over because there was no pasture, there was no hay.
But Arkansas's most urgent problem is flooding.
We've had extreme floods here in the last 8 years. That one was a 100-year-old flood, never seen like that before. Washed out roads and just did incredible damage, destroyed bridges. It's like, why are we having these extremes?
Larry moved here in the 1970s as a part of the Back to the Land movement, like my parents. They wanted to opt out of American consumerism. You could say that Larry was a climate change activist before the term existed.
Was there much discussion about climate change, or how has that discussion changed in your time out here?
Oh, Alice, when we moved here in 78, we were talking about the quality of food and having some control over what we ate. But as far as the change in climate, it wasn't a term. It wasn't used. We didn't know anything about that. We didn't hear anything about that.
But the various things that affect the climate were on Larry's mind.
So that was more of the issue. And, you know, climate change wasn't even on the radar. It wasn't even a term. It wasn't being used. And so, as much as we wanted to reduce our need for fossil fuels because of pollution, we didn't connect, and there was not a connection between the pollution and climate change. It was more about the pollution of our waterways, the pollution of our of the air that we breathe. You know, and that a lot of that changed with the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act, and that happened in my lifetime when I was, you know, in college.
Larry reminds me of my parents. As I listen to him, I recognize similarities from my own childhood. His views are different from Bob's, and maybe that's because of where he gets his information.
I've listened to NPR ever since it became available here in Northwest Arkansas, probably, I don't know, 40 years ago. And I don't listen to it religiously, but when I do have news information coming to me on the radio, it comes from NPR. I read the state newspaper. I'm real big on local news. I'm really big on the state news. And we didn't want to have TV in our home. We didn't want to have that distraction. I didn't want somebody telling me or presenting to me what they thought, you know, life was in America. I think it's a bunch of hooey.
The information that Larry gets from NPR is based on scientific reports, whereas Bob's news sources speculate, for example, that snow is proof that global warming doesn't exist. Still, Larry says there are some reasons to be hopeful. The pandemic has made people think more about self-sufficiency and growing their own food, buying bees, my dad bought bees, for example, and raising chickens. He says it's one more reason to push forward.
So, you know, this whole pandemic thing has really changed a lot of people in ways that I would have never imagined.
I had to figure out a way to bring Bob and Larry together. Larry, at first, refused to talk to Bob, his own senator. He was angry that Bob had been among the politicians who sued over the state coronavirus restrictions. And on a personal level, he was nervous about being around an anti-masker at all. And it went both ways. Bob was busy caring for his wife with cancer. So I asked Larry to take a day to think over my proposal to meet Bob, and I appealed to his sense of civic responsibility. The thing is, I've worked in dangerous places covering migration, violence, and natural disasters, but honestly, I felt like one of my biggest achievements has been bringing together Bob and Larry to talk about climate change during the pandemic. Larry and I head up Bob's long, winding driveway on a sunny December day. His house has a second-story balcony where he's usually sitting on a big porch swing. Larry is nervous about the meeting.
No, I'm willing to share and bring him along in any way that would help him better understand what's happening out there, what's happening with us today. You know, what his constituents are looking at and embracing as far as the future. And so,
just like with me, Larry prepared for the conversation with Bob by talking to a climate change scientist, and he wrote down important points he wanted to make. He has a goal in mind here. He wants to convince Bob to put solar panels on the state capitol or on his home.
Have you been out here before to OARC?
I've been to OARC one time years ago.
And so you are in Senator Bob Ballinger's district.
Yes.
So he represents you in the Arkansas Senate.
Yes.
And to get down here is what, like an hour and 20 minute drive for you?
Yeah, about that.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
When we reach the house, Bob yells down to us from the balcony.
Hey, y'all. Still there. Hey, Bob, how's it going?
It's going good. How you doing?
I'm
Mr. Larry, I guess,
you?
Right?
You bet. Nice to meet you, Bob.
I'll meet you downstairs.
Okay, sounds good.
Larry gives pickled okra that he grew to Bob and Jessica.
I don't ever go any place without bringing it.
Oh, we love pickled okra.
Well,
so
take it up to her and tell her to pop the lid and feed those kids.
Okay, all right. Well, that's a plan. I'll take it up there. I have one daughter. We've we've got a kind of a thing for pickled okra, so this is great.
Yeah, with a bunch of kids, you open the lid and they just disappear.
Bob shows Larry his property. They walk down to the river, which is a surreal blue-green, and they sit on a large tree trunk that washed up in the last flood. Bob and Larry are socially distanced from each other, and Bob opens up about his wife, Jessica.
She has what they call triple-negative breast cancer, so it's not responsive to hormones typically, and basically the only treatment is chemotherapy, at least that's what they say.
Larry asks about Jessica's treatment, and they talk for a while. The two warm up to each other, but we eventually have to broach the elephant in the room, climate change.
What we're here to talk about is, you know, change and how can we do something about, you know, climate change. And Larry is a constituent in your district, and so I think it's possible to have a constructive conversation about, you know, the way that Larry thinks that things could be done that would be helpful for the area.
Sure. Yeah, and, definitely.
I've got a lot of, I document extremes.
Yeah.
Right. You know, the ice storm in 2009, the extreme flood in 2011, the drought in 2012, where everybody sold their cows, there was no pasture.
Yep.
You know all about that.
Yep.
So all of that I've documented because it speaks to, you know, what I think is indicative of, you know, of what we're, it's not science anymore. It's we're seeing it.
Yeah.
It's happening.
Yeah.
You know, it's what we're living with and we're having to adjust. I'm having to adjust how I grow.
When Larry says he has documented climate change, he's referring to the photos and notes he takes every time there are climate events, ice storms, floods, heat waves.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, if you have a bucket of water, and you took an eyedropper or a dropper and you dropped a drop of water into that bucket, is there more water in the bucket? And the answer is yes, right? Is it discernible? Does it make a big difference? Is it, you know, I would never say that man is not contributing to climate change. The question is how much, right? You got climate is affected by natural wildfires. Climate is affected by volcanoes. It's affected by, you know, organic, it's affected by a bunch of other things that even contributes to the carbon, not to mention whatever is inside the earth that is changing things. The question is man's contribution to it, is it discernible?
Bob continues like this for a while, mentioning things like snow as evidence that climate change is not real.
Once again, is that directly impacted because of man's impact, or is there some other thing that is changing it like it's happened historically and prehistorically, and then how do we fix it is where really the argument to me falls there.
And what is the risk if we're wrong?
Exactly.
And but we should have done something. You know, but those kids and those grandkids, those are the ones that are going to pay the consequence.
They talk about everything from their families to raising goats. Then Larry puts Bob on the spot about his responsibility as a state lawmaker.
People hungry today.
What's the risk of not doing anything?
Right. Well, and I get it, but there's a risk, and so I think
and Bob, it's happening so fast right now with the melting of the tundra, which is releasing more carbon, and increasing in the ocean elevation, you know, from the sloughing off of all the glaciers, the South Pole.
Larry has solutions for Bob, and he pitches them with passion. But Bob evades a lot of Larry's questions.
You know, we've got a lot of problems out there, and you guys need to help us solve these problems. So, you know, what can we do, small, at our level? Put in solar.
Yep.
Drive an electric car.
Yep.
Lead.
Yep. And the collective.
Show the other, you know, representatives and legislators what can be done and crunch those numbers and see if I'm wrong.
Larry argues that solar energy has become so affordable that it is competitive with fossil fuels. This is true, and Larry has the data to prove it to Bob.
Yeah. So, you know, by example, you know, I'm standing in front of you as an example.
Yeah.
You can stand in front of the other legislators as an example of what we can do from the bottom up.
Bob argues that clean energy is so expensive that it could cause starvation. So I'm happy to see that here, face to face with Larry, he's listening. Larry also talks about electric cars being cheaper than those fueled by gas, a hard sell in America where big trucks are a part of the culture. Bob shies away from that, but he does entertain the idea that solar could be used for a water pump.
Well, I would not mind setting up the pump with solar, and that's where the well house, the pump house, is one of the separate meters, and that would be really nice to have that on solar anyway. That way, you know, we don't run out of water if we get, I mean, the reality is that power goes out here occasionally, and if we get another big ice storm like we did a few years back, you know, we won't be back on for a long time. And so I'd love to be able to have the pump house and my freezers on solar.
And your solar...
At this point, Larry and Bob are saying goodbye. Both were apprehensive, but they ended up talking for 3 hours.
No, thanks for taking time out of your day. If, you know, when we started this, you probably wanted to talk to me about as much as I wanted to talk to you.
No.
Now you're paid. It's your job, but you know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty.
No, I mean, what really, you did. I enjoyed it.
I had a whole bunch of like hard labor planned today, so you took me out of that.
I ask them if it makes any difference to meet in person.
Well, is there value in what we're doing? Have I learned anything? Yeah. Have you learned anything?
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
There's
value in looking at a person, you know, and putting a face with a name.
Yeah, it's the only way you really get to know them.
If you really want to make real progress.
Yeah. Don't you feel like, though, with you, that probably the more engagement that you have, it's probably...
Getting two people who disagree to meet in person during the pandemic, especially when one refuses to wear a mask, was daunting. But it was worth it, because they often found a fair amount in common. After their discussion, Larry wrote Bob several long emails. When Bob didn't respond, Larry was disappointed. But Bob later voted to bring solar panels to a city in our district. Climate change is a challenge that we must face together. And it's not as if Bob and Larry solved the problem that day by the river. But the meeting did give me hope. Something as small as convincing your local representative to adopt solar energy is a step in the right direction. For On Spec, this is Alice Driver in Oark, Arkansas.
So who wants to visit Arkansas? Let's go see all the beauty in nature, post-pandemic, of course, because I'm afraid it might not last long. As a former Californian, I was just frightened last summer when my family there told me the sky had turned red from the fires burning down the forest. And the fires didn't stop for months and months. I know people are tired of doomsday predictions, and young people want action and hope. So we thank Bob and Larry for sitting down to talk, at least. Bob has been busy supporting legislation to advance gun rights and ban healthcare for transgenders. Larry and his family got COVID-19, but have luckily survived. Thanks, Alice, for taking us home with you. Shout out to the team who worked on this episode. Editors Alisa Resnick, Oscar Durand, and me. Producer and sound engineer Oscar Durand. Additional help from Omar Farouk, Luke Rin Piper, Ryan Barba, and Özge Sebzeci. In 2 weeks, journalist Lisa Jane Harding will take us to her city, Hong Kong, where China's pretty much taken over, using fake news. And remember our Patreon account? We'd be most grateful if you can become a member there. It takes money to make these documentaries, and we'll be embarking on our next season later this year. You can find it on the About page of www.onspecpodcast.com.